Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's the Media Project, one more chance to gather a little insight and analysis into issues confronting the media.
Who are you?
I'm Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, sitting in for my editor, Rex Smith. And joining me today is WAMC's CEO, Alan Chartok. Happy New Year, Alan.
And Happy New Year to you, Michael. It's always great. We love having you on the air with us. You are such a bright guy.
And also with us is a frequent panelist on the Media Project, Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. Welcome, Judy.
Happy New Year, Mike.
Aren't you guys competitors? Don't you hate each other?
We are fierce competitors and good friends.
And we are going to duke it out after this out on the street with snowballs.
And you both live in this strange place called Schenectady.
It is the only place in the planet with that name, and we're proud.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
The only one in America? Because
right.
I know Steventown is the only other one, and somebody stole the sign saying the only one.
There's two Peorias. People say Peoria, but Schenectady is unique.
And I know a woman who always says to me, I'm going to Paris, France. And I say, where else? Paris, Texas.
Which there probably are. Paris is all over the world.
But we're proud Schenectadians, and we're glad to join you here, Alan. And I think you have some letters to read.
Well, I have a letter, and it's a very interesting one. Hello. I recently read a news item on a website, MediaMatters.org, and wonder if any of the Media Project panel had seen it. Conservatives are launching a new venture called Truth Revolt, that's one word, that claims to promote the anti-media view. They appear to believe that the only reason people with left-wing views win elections is because the media are dominated by leftists. My question to the Media Project panel, is this just another nut job with a beef against the lamestream media, in quotes, or a disturbing new direction for what seems to pass for journalism these days? And then he goes on to basically give us the whole rationale that this right-wing group is pushing. And so the question for you guys is, because there have been a lot of studies of this, we know, we professors have been looking at it for years, in which there's an attempt to judge who runs the media, and reporters are a little to the left of center, which makes sense because they make less money. And
those are related directly?
And publishers tend to be, a little bit more Republican sometimes. And so it's an interesting question. Is the media loaded to the left? What do you guys think?
I'm reluctant to dismiss something as a nut job right off the bat. But then I read one of the things on the center. It says, the media must be destroyed where they stand. Its mission statement reads, that is our mission at Truth Revolt. The goal of Truth Revolt is simple, unmask leftists in the media for who they are, destroy their credibility with the American public, and devastate their funding bases.
Ooh.
It seems a little nutty to me.
Well, if you're on the receiving end, it would seem that way. Mike?
Well, it's not a new idea to come up with a less liberal, more conservative balance. Fox News was really predicated on that when it began a few years ago. It's been very successful. There's many publications, there's many networks, there's many talk show hosts that are nationally syndicated that reflect not so liberal point of view. So I can't really see what the real problem is.
Well, you make a very good point, because as we know, and as you just alluded to, Mike Spain, there's no question that the way that it works is that Fox has more listeners or viewers than any of the other cable networks do. So how does that fit in? Or maybe it's never right enough. In other words, maybe Fox is now being accused of selling out.
Well, it sounds like the Congress where what we thought were the right wing are being attacked by the farther right wing. And that's always going to happen in any kind of political scape. So there are critics of Fox, I suppose, and think that they aren't going far enough to represent the conservative point of view. But I think just the success you cited for Fox News shows that there is a diverse audience out there, and there's diverse media speaking to that audience. And it is, in our country, predicated on business success. I mean, if it succeeds, sure, you know, it needs to have a mechanism, a business model that works. Fox's works. They get a lot of advertising, they get a lot of viewers, and it works.
You know, the letter writer also notes that the reason left-leaning people get elected is because of the media. I don't think that's true. I think that people of both persuasions get elected to office, and I think, in general, the mainstream media treats elections very fairly and balanced. I know you probably disagree with
well,
some segments of the media.
Yeah.
But I don't think the only reason people with left-wing views win election is because the media is dominated by leftists.
So. Well, take a look at the New York POST, a name I don't like to pronounce because I find it so abhorrent. But they sell 700,000 newspapers a day. It is run by a right.
They have a good sports page.
Yeah, well, and they put a lot. I'm so sorry that I have to mention this in front of Judy. I'm almost red in the face. But they put a lot of very attractive women, scantily clad. It's one of my favorite words, scantily, you know, in the paper. And that helps also. But it's interesting, you know, they can be fiercely opposed to political candidacies, but they don't win. In other words, you know, the Daily News at the time, I don't believe it endorsed, I may be wrong, but I don't think they endorsed the Mirror Franklin Roosevelt at any point, but he won overwhelmingly. So it's not as if the media is one. It's not. It's a whole bunch of voices.
That's exactly right. And we tend to lump it in and say the media as a, you know, a singular entity, but it is diverse, and that's what makes it good, and that's what makes it work.
Well, I would disagree with you about one thing, Mike. You're not Rex, so I'll let you off the hook.
You're not Rex.
but I don't know that it works. I mean, you know, we're reading a lot about how many people have been fired at every newspaper and how the resources are dwindling and how few people are in a newsroom. And we see stories, I know you guys have seen it this week, in which one group is putting out foreign news for virtually every television station in the country. And they use analysis which is far from complete. So I don't know that it works. I'll put it that way.
It is a industry, the media industry, especially the print media industry that Judy and I represent so well here. It has been under stress in recent years. There's some positive trends, although they're not at the profit levels that they were back before the Great Recession began. Newspaper stocks in 2013
are through the roof.
Well, they're better than they were. I mean, they're, you know, the big companies like Gannett in 2012, it was at 18. It's now at almost 30, and that's a 64% increase of their stock value.
But not back down to when they were really riding high.
Oh, no. They were way up in the 40s and 50s,
yeah.
You know, way back in the good old days prior to the Great Recession, back in the early part of this century, the 21st century. So things have changed rather quickly. But what it means, I think, and I'd love to hear Judy's opinion, it shows that newspapers are adjusting to the stresses that they are facing. Obviously, we're doing it with much fewer resources. That's the negative. But we are coming up with models that are, in some cases, around the country and hopefully in the capital region, thriving, you know.
Yeah, that is the challenge, these new business models that we're all working on. Sure, we have fewer resources, but what we're trying to do is be more selective about what we do and how we do, stick to the important issues that we really care about. But we also, as you mentioned, the scantily clad women, although you won't see many of them in our newspaper, we do have to entertain our audience so everybody will come to the paper and read it. But this idea of dwindling resources is sure it's there. What we are is a more efficient industry. But there's also technology. You've got to realize that 10 years ago, I had, you know, three people cutting out the newspaper and filing the little paper clips. And now that's all done electronically. So I don't need a person to do that. So that's a better thing instead of that person is doing something else.
Well, in all deference to both of you, who I admire so much, one could go into a newsroom in the old days, a big old newsroom in any one of a number of papers, and see, you know, 50, 60 people hunkered out over there, dare I say it, typewriters or later computers, you know, doing their thing. And now sometimes you go into one of those big old newsrooms with the same number of desks and you see three guys huddled down at the end of the room.
Well, that's true. Part of that, and I think Judy addressed it, is technology. It allows people to be mobile. There's a lot of reporters and photographers who never come into the newsroom. I mean, they're out and about. They have their laptops. They connect. They do their job. They do a great job. But I would be misleading if I said we had the resources that we had even 10 years ago. It's a diminished newsroom.
Well, why would anybody go into the profession? I mean, you know, I run a journalism education program too, and kids want to go. I mean, they want to have jobs on newspapers, and there are fewer jobs, obviously, to hire for. But I know that to see any newspaper give a raise to its people is, you know, a thing sort of the past. Whereas here at Public Radio, we gave a 2% raise last year. We're very proud of it.
I think he's bragging.
No, well, because we think it's not right to, you know, to starve people.
I predict that you're going to see a continuation of this realignment of the print newspaper industry, you know, and the media industry, in that there will be more stability. And with that will come some growth. It'll be new. It'll be different. I can't predict exactly what it will be, but I think the trends are mixed. But it's the beginning of the year. I want to be optimistic, and I'm optimistic that this will be a continuation of improvement in the business side of newspapers, which without the business, without a successful margin, you're not going to have any way to fulfill your mission.
Are you guys selling advertising, front page advertising, in a way that didn't exist in the old days? I mean, you know, it bothers me when I open my favorite newspaper here in Albany, and then my favorite newspaper in Schenectady, you know, the Gazette or the Times Union, and there's some kind of cover covering half of the newspaper, or there's a stick.
You know, wrap. And also a spadia is another term for
what's it called?
A spadia is a term for that fold-over
spadia?
Piece.
Yeah,
spadia. Or a three-page wrap. There's different names for it. But what you're referring to is an advertising page and a half that's folded around the front page, and you have to kind of peel it off.
Well, I don't like it.
Yeah, it's some people do object to it, but I will say this. It gives an advertiser a very prominent location without interfering with our front page.
Well, it interferes with me. I'm trying to read the headline, and this thing is over there. Or they've slapped some kind of stick-em thing on top of, you know.
Let me go back. It's right. Without a profit margin, you're not going to be able to fulfill your mission. This is something that is a very premium location that advertisers pay
well, sure.
And
I know you're not Rex, and I'm sorry for doing this to you, Mike. But obviously, because, you know, with him, I would do it with delight. But there is a question in my mind as to whether or not, and I'll tell you what he would say.
Well, why don't you tell me what he would say?
He would say, and what, you don't take underwriting on WAMC? That's what he would say.
That's exactly right.
You know, we were having a very serious conversation in our boardroom just last week or the week before about front page advertising, because we added a new place on the top of our page. And we're going back and forth about probably 45 minutes later. Someone looks on the wall. The first copy of the Daily Gazette back from 1880, 1890s is up there. And right on the front page is a very big ad.
Isn't that interesting? The first Times Union, where it's the Albany Morning Times, which started in 1856, was basically all ads. And then they ran out of ads, so they went out and found some information to put in there to fill up where the ads weren't. And then they said, hey, you know, if we could get some more information, we could maybe, you know, make this thing go. And that's sort of how it got going. So advertising, even on the front page, is not new and unique. It's all part of trends. And the bottom line is that without advertising support, the cost of producing a newspaper, a quality newspaper, would be prohibitive, and people wouldn't pay it.
Well, but as you guys give way more and more, and do this more and more, doesn't that take on sort of a life of its own, in that the expectations of the advertisers, so that they can get more prominent spacing? In the old days, newspaper would say, no, you can't have that because, you know, it's the integrity of the newspaper and all the rest of it. Now you say you can have it. In the case of public broadcasting, we say we tried to keep our underwriting announcements at 11 words. I have been counting more than 11 words lately.
There is a drift, and it goes back and forth, Alan, and I don't think it compromises. It only supports the integrity of the journalism when you pull past that little page in the front. I did want to say, you're listening to The Media Project, a program about issues confronting the media. I'm Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, filling in for Rex Smith, along with Alan Shartok and Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. And you can share your thoughts with us anytime at media@wamc.org.
Now, you both are top editors. Well, I have you both here at your newspapers.
I have a boss. Judy is the top editor at the Gazette.
Right. And do you ever look at each other's papers in the morning and say, darn, or something worse, darn, you know, they got a story we didn't get?
Yeah, my husband can attest that that does happen at my house in the morning.
over breakfast?
Yes. Well, not over breakfast, before breakfast.
Uh-huh. First thing I do when I come downstairs in the morning is go to the front door, pick up both papers and kind of open them up and kind of look at the two covers, pull off those little tabs that you just talked about. And sometimes it's, ooh, you know, so we win some, we lose some.
Do you get blamed from above? Do your publishers ever call you and say, you know, how come they have that? You don't?
I think we're the ones who call other people and say, why do they have it and we don't?
Right. So there are people who have beats, as we say.
Right. Our publishers my publisher is definitely interested in what's in the paper and keeping us current and not getting scooped, but he leaves that to me.
Uh-huh. And I think that's that's true at the Times Union. The publisher rarely will complain if he sees an omission. He really does leave it up to the newsroom, and in the same way that Judy just described at the Daily Gazette. And it's the editors that are turning to their colleagues and asking why we missed something. And, you know, that is a reality of a diminished staff in a newsroom. You're a little more understanding, and it used to be if we didn't have it every day in front of everybody else, it was the end of the world. Now it's, well, what can we do to take that story back, take it a further step, analyze it, do it better than the competition do it, and you know, that those are the discussions. And I think in the end, the public is the beneficiary, because we're both coming at it. We're coming at it trying to make more of it than the competitor did, and the public is the beneficiary. And I think it is a successful system. Flawed and not perfect, but successful.
Well, you know, what we try to preach around here at public radio is the guy or the woman who has the beat has to take ownership of the beat. In other words, the editor can't be the person who said, why weren't you there? What did you say? The person who's covering City Hall, or some people say in different cities, Silly Hall, and say, you know, where was that story? Well, I can't be two places, or I can't be three places at once. And that's an interesting issue, isn't it?
I find that the reporters today, I mean, Judy, you can weigh in, are more protective and more aggressive about their beats. Often they will come up to you and say, oh, man, I didn't have that story. And you'll be trying to say, well, it's reasonable you had this, 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 and this, and you were tweeting and you were posting on the blog and, you know,
doing photography
and doing some photography, editing some video, whatever. It's completely reasonable that you might have missed one story. What can we do to come back at it? You know, the reporters are well aware of competition.
Have you guys ever fired anybody for not getting enough stories? There's an awful lot of silence. They're pursed lips in the
room. Well, if somebody doesn't get enough stories, if someone is not productive, that might lead to their departure, you know, during a probationary period or over time. But, you know, no, the sort of motion picture era image of an editor coming in with a cigar and saying, right, saying, you blew it, buddy, you're out of here. You know, that doesn't happen.
You don't fire someone for getting scooped once. If they get scooped for a whole year or 6 months or even 3 months, you might want to either reassign them
or put them on the television.
Or think they may want to consider another career.
Yeah. Well, because I run the Legislative Gazette newspaper, which is a journalism training project, and there's nothing that our kids aspire to more than working for either of you. But is there too much journalism education in the country where, you know, too many young people are being produced and therefore disappointed with the lack of jobs?
You know, I don't think so at all. Remember, it's still a very noble profession with a really interesting career ahead of you. Every day, it's news, so you get.
And if you work at it long enough, some politician will hire you as a flack and triple your salary.
Yeah, probably not triple, but
double.
Sometime.
Yeah. But I tell kids in college that there are plenty of jobs out there if you're good, if you can write well, if you're enterprising, if you're thoughtful, if you know if your news judgment is good or is developing, there are plenty of jobs out there for good people.
Yeah, there is certainly a more difficulty today finding placement at a daily newspaper, but we have hired young people, bright young people in the last few years that have very promising careers. There are other paths. There's other value to having a communications education. You can use it in if you go into law, if you go into
you can go into communications.
All of those. I think it's a great background to have, and some people will work it their entire career, and some people will use it as a launch pad to another career that's related. But being able to communicate well and to tell it on different media is those are fantastic skills to have, and I don't think that it's a waste to go for that kind of education.
Well, Mr. Moderator, or any other subjects? We only got a few more minutes.
Well, you know, we were talking before about Fox News, but there was a little controversy in the last week about MSNBC, which is kind of the liberal, opposite of Fox News.
Doesn't do nearly as well.
No, but it does have a wide audience. And one of its a popular host there is Melissa Harris Perry. And she ended up committing a faux pas. She made fun on the air of a photo of Mitt Romney's extended family because one of the children in it was African-American, an adopted child. And she welded into the Sesame Street song, "One of these things is not like the other," dot, dot, dot. And she took a lot of criticism from that, and she immediately apologized. But it does show that in trying to be entertaining and trying to be provocative on these sort of right and left cable channels, you can really offend people and step outside of, civility and journalistic bounds. And she herself is a Mormon, and she's African-American in a family where she was adopted by whites. So she related to it very much, but she made fun of it, and she apologized. It was an interesting development.
What do you make of that, Judy?
You know, I went and looked at the piece again, and for the Media Project, did my homework a little bit, and the whole premise of the section that they were doing, and they were taking photographs of politicians and trying to write or verbalize funny captions for them all. So they were setting themselves up in the first place, but someone picked this picture and they went said obviously a faux pas. As someone who's not used to talking on the radio and is doing so now, I know that can happen, but these are real professionals. They should know better.
Well, it raises the question as to whether she knew darn well what was going to happen. You know, there is always this, look, you're going to be a host for MSNBC. You got to fire up the troops. You got to give them red meat.
That's exactly right.
Apologize.
You really have to push, you know.
I am so disillusioned.
Yeah. They're pushing the envelope exactly to appeal to their audience. And at the same time, they're walking on that line of being a opinion person, a commentator versus a journalist.
Yeah,
this isn't journalism. I think this is just entertainment.
Well, one of the things that annoys me about all you people the most is this business of
the monolith media.
False distinctions between entertainment and journalism. You know, what I love is that you go around, both of you and Rex too, and say, and there's a guy on the New York POST of all places, you know, who say, that guy isn't a journalist. He's a professor or he's a this or he's that. You know, who gets to define who's a journalist?
There is no license to become a journalist. And it's a profession that has standards, and it's really governed by both the industry itself and by critics from the outside, people who are professors and people who are consumers of the media.
Yeah, those who can are journalists, and those who can't are professors critiquing journalists.
Well, I think you can judge it by the work, too, by what you write, by what you say, by what you produce.
Well, some can, some can't.
Some people who are judging from the outside?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that everybody has the first story we started with, which is that there are people on the right who are saying that isn't journalism,
right.
You know. I mean,
well, entertainment, as Judy said before, is part of journalism. But that just about wraps up Media Project.
We didn't even talk about any of the topics.
Some of the best topics, I should say, that we're out of time. Thanks to Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick and WAMC's own Alan Chartok. I'm Mike Spain, associate editor of the Times Union, and we wish you a very happy 2014.
Indeed.
City desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people, it's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery, She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk, hold the press, hold the press.